welcome to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. This is a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. And we've got a pretty loaded show for you today. We're talking about the medical marijuana case and marijuana laws in Canada, because the neocons, Mr. Harper and his gang, have decided that they know best on this. They're not listening, as usual, to anybody that knows what they're talking about, and, you know, they're going to bring out a whole bunch of stuff out that's going to make a whole pile of their buddies' money and absolutely do no good for the people that actually need the product. Sounds familiar. So, I have two wonderful guests on the line. I have Lori McEachern. Did I get that right, Lori?
McEachern, yes, thank you.
Wonderful. She's the director of the Medicinal Cannabis Patients Alliance of Canada. And I also have David Dubois on the line, and he is a medical marijuana user, and I think I've got half of the community up also on my Facebook wall. Welcome,
you
two.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting us, Michelle.
Wonderful. So just to give our audience a little bit of background, I have a little intro clip here that we're not going to play because I haven't got it up yet. Okay, so you guys, you want just to let the audience know here that the Conservative government has, you know, made an announcement that tomorrow they're going to change all of the rules.
Just to let the audience know.
And, you know, one of the things that they're changing, or the big things that they're changing, is that they're going to stop people from being able to grow their own medical marijuana, which is a licensed activity at this point, and turn it into a $1.3 billion free market where people register major corporate grow-ops and provide the product through that scale. And I take it you guys have an issue with that. Lori?
Oh, my turn? A huge issue with that, yes. I just as by way of a little synopsis of the background, the medicinal cannabis, or the quote-unquote MMAR, or Marijuana Medical Access Regulations and Program, were implemented in 2001 in Canada in response to a Supreme Court ruling, R.V. Parker, where they decided that Mr. Parker should have access to medicinal cannabis if it had medicinal benefit to him. Unfortunately, to this day, to my knowledge, I don't think Mr. Parker's ever had an authorization. Point one. Point two is that for 12 years, people who have been authorized to use cannabis by authorization, I mean that their doctors fill out the form that it takes to go with the package of up to 33 pages that were just horrendous to try to figure out. And we applied for it, and we were able to either purchase from the government at $5 a gram from Prairie Plant Systems, some extremely low-grade, what I would call byproduct, not but, or grow it ourselves or have a designated grower produce it for us. So for up to 12 years, some of us have been producing for ourselves in our gardens, outdoors, in our homes, with proper, I have to stress this at this point, if a person is sick and living in their home and growing in their home, chances are that they are not stealing hydro, that there is no mold hazard, fire hazard, or other health risk, because it is your home, it is your place of residence, it's where your parents, your children, your relatives live, those loved ones that you care so deeply about, and it is where we're doing it for our health. Why would we put ourselves in unhealthy environments?
Nicely said, Lori.
Thank you. The places that they are complaining about, that they have used as an excuse for this change in the program, are the ones that were taking advantage of the system, that were getting licenses and growing quasi-legally, I'll say, in unsafe, hazardous conditions, putting them, you know, near schools or children or whatever situation may be. That's not those of us who are on $10,000 a year of a disability pension and producing for ourselves in the sun and the wind and the rain outside the cost to us, I don't know about you, David, but this year I'm coming in under 3 cents a gram. How about you?
I just watered them.
Really?
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. The sun doesn't cost anything. The water probably cost a little bit, and a bit of labor. That was it.
Well, I'm counting, like, renting a tiller and buying worm poop.
Oh, that's a... The neighbors have been helping me out, and we did get horse poop.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I've been lucky in terms of that. I've had a lot of support from neighbors and family and friends. And, the cost has, it's hard to, when I was growing it indoors, yes, it was incredibly expensive. And I just realized last night that all these super licenses are going to be grown indoors, which is total insanity. I mean, it's not sustainable. The operating costs are going to be phenomenal for a substandard product.
Okay, so you know, that introduces this to our audience really well. And one of the medical marijuana users, this is her story, and she did run into one of those bad operations. So let's listen to this, and then you guys can comment.
Like to be?
To be me.
To be me.
This is what it's like to be me.
Sue Stevenson has multiple sclerosis, and the only drug she's found to soothe all the symptoms of the devastating disease is marijuana. She is one of hundreds of Canadians licensed by Health Canada to possess the plant for medicinal purposes.
The pharmaceuticals, I felt out of touch. I couldn't even carry a conversation. But the cannabis, I feel alert. I feel I'm walking.
Many say the federal government's medicinal marijuana system is flawed. They say it's open to fraud, can attract criminals, and has few checks and balances to ensure those who have licenses to possess or grow the plant are adhering to the rules. This week, officials closed a Windsor Park home where people were permitted to grow medicinal marijuana after deeming it unfit for human habitation. Stevenson, who once got her supply there, isn't surprised.
If they had gone into this site, I'm sure they would have said, no way. You can't produce medicine in an environment like this, because they were my first growers. And it didn't last that long simply because I would get sick going into that house.
The bigger issue, many argue, is that the feds don't do due diligence to follow up on whether those earning licenses are adhering to the conditions which come with it. With just 15 inspectors nationwide, Health Canada won't reveal how often they do inspections or follow-ups, or if they do them at all.
But they don't have the resources. I'm sure they don't have the resources. Of course not. We don't have resources for anything anymore. So it's up to me. It's up to me, the user. I'm the ultimate one responsible here. And if I got a person that's not following the rules per se, I just move on.
While many people like Stevenson legitimately require marijuana for medicinal reasons, she understands how corruption can creep into the system. Under proposed regulatory changes to the Marijuana Medical Access Program, the feds want to phase out licensing individuals to grow the marijuana in Canadian communities, instead allowing only commercial enterprises to do so. Many critics say that is a move in the right direction. Reporting for Sun News, this is Nadia Muharib.
And, you know, we need to bring up the fact that, you know, that was a Sun News article.
Yeah. And, you know, I totally agree.
Oh, yeah. The predatorial behavior has crept into the whole system. And there's sort of an intrinsic corruptness to the system that brought a lot of predatorial behavior into the system. And her story is not isolated. Lori, do you agree with that?
Oh, totally agree with that, yes. Sadly, that is the rule, not the exception in our situation. And through the hundreds of patients that I've been in contact with over the last 3 years, I would say, yeah, that is the rule, not the exception. That I personally went through 3 growers that abused the license for however they may have and moved on to the next one. And ultimately, I will say, initially in 2006, I started purchasing in quote unquote Compassion Club dispensary environment. And that clearly, my family will never have any assets now because of that. And therefore I was forced to find growers, and then the growers abused the situation, and so I chose to grow for myself ultimately. And caring for ourselves is the only way to go. And that lady is entirely right that when we applied for these licenses, it clearly, within what I read, I was agreeing to somebody coming and checking to make sure that I only had as many plants as they told me, and that I kept it where I said I was going to keep it, and that I had security in place that I said I was going to have. And I will interject at this point that CBC did a access to information in June of 2012, and they asked how many times an inspector had from Health Canada had actually inspected a medicinal cannabis garden in the last 12 years, and it came back with no records found.
The other thing, too, I'd like to interject as well is that I don't, for me, with growing, Ministry of Agriculture was an incredible resource. I'm not sure to what extent the RCMP needs, yes, okay, there is security issues, and security issues are big. But in terms of a resource, Ministry of Agriculture is much more in place to be a resource than the RCMP in terms of inspections, or at least someone we can go with that has some knowledge around some of the challenges that took place for us.
Yes, definitely.
So you guys, you've talked about how much this crop costs you to grow for your own medical purposes. So, you know, let's deal with a little bit of this money issue here. You know, in the article in the Globe and Mail that broke this story, you know, they're talking about amounts of $50,000. They're talking $7.60 a gram. For the
more
product.
Than that.
Yeah.
It's
already
totally more than that. You've got the capital and a huge capital investment if it's going to be grown indoors. The operating costs are going to be phenomenal. It's going to be hired staff. I think those numbers are totally, totally bogus.
Yep, me too.
Unless they're going to get subsidized somehow,
I can't see that coming in that cheap either, David. Not with a 50% normal commercial markup is 50%.
So
right?
can either of you afford $50,000 plus
no.
here?
No, not one patient can. Most, you know, we are patients. We are disabled. No insurance company or any provincial disability program is going to pick up the cost. We are stuck with the cost. How?
Yes.
When you're living on maximum $15,000 a year, how do you think we're going to come up with $50,000 a year? Like,
bingo.
Oh, well, you know, they talk about marijuana being a gateway drug, so, you know, maybe it's a gateway to crime because everybody's going to have to rip off Harper's house to pay for it.
Well, I'm just hopeful it'll drive the prices on the street down so I can afford my medicine.
Well, I'm not even prepared to go there. I mean, the legal challenges are going to be, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
As Laurie suggested, I mean, that way back when, we were entitled to reasonable access. This is not reasonable access under any circumstances.
No.
I mean, the legal battle should be fairly easy to show that, you know, nobody is getting reasonable access.
Okay, so I see two issues here. I see the exploitation of those people that can't grow their own, because if you don't have somewhere to grow it, then you can't grow your own. So I mean, all of the problems that I'm seeing here are with third-party growers that are growing it and then providing it to people. I don't see any of their examples of problems with people that are growing for their own personal use. Is that true?
Pretty much, I'd say
yeah.
So. I don't... Yeah.
Well, you become an intrinsic part of your own health care. You are involved with your own health care. It becomes part of you. And it takes on a whole life of its own. I mean, growing it, I moved from growing it to becoming an urban organic farmer. I mean, I learned about growing. I mean, it was the most intensive learning experience since university. But my life as a result of growing it has changed dramatically, and I've become more involved in my own care. And
definitely, me too. Yeah.
Here's a little clip about growers' profit on the Canadian marijuana stage.
I think the Fraser Institute called cannabis prohibition a gift of revenue to organized crime.
But what do growers and dealers think of this?
Would you like to see the government in the future legalize marijuana here in BC?
Stealing money from us?
I know I wouldn't like to see it legalized. The government would control and regulate the product, and that could potentially hurt a lot of people in the industry.
How can you compete with factories perfectly rolled out doobies? They'd perfect it, and we'd all be out of money.
It makes for strange bedfellows. You've got the police and the high-level drug dealers both agreeing that we should maintain this prohibition. Well, when you got high-level drug dealers saying prohibition is good, you might want to scratch your head a little and think, well, shoot, why would they want to continue prohibition?
I can't imagine why a grower who's making $150,000 or $300,000 a year would ever want to see marijuana legalized. I mean, the last thing a grower wants is sensible policy. The madness continues and they continue to get rich.
You know, Betty, I'm going to bring this up at the business meeting tomorrow.
You make the penalties tougher? You know what? Good. For those people who are not getting caught, price goes up.
See, so not only do we allow them to tell us how much drugs are going to be supplied, the potency of those drugs, who they're going to sell to, where they're going to sell them, just to make sure they get it all right, we let them keep all the profits.
So you've got essentially a Wild West. You've got an unregulated market in which anything can happen. It certainly may work for things that people generally accept, but if you try to prohibit something that's in demand, that the people want, then it's pure folly.
Now, this brings up a legalization issue, but the reason I wanted to bring this up to you guys is because basically it looks like the Harper government has said, hey, all these organized crime places are making all this money. My buddies should be making it instead. So, so they've gone into the grow-up business.
It does look like that. Yes, it does.
And you're going to see those people who've got those commercial licenses being the biggest lobby against legalization.
Well, it's in their best interest, right?
Oh, it's totally going to be in their best interest.
So, so basically, Harper's just gone into the organized crime racket.
No kidding. Bingo.
Yeah. And I'd like to
at the expense of patience.
Okay. Yes, and I'd like to bring up one issue here that I think reigns above all else, is that the Canada Health Act, okay, Canadian healthcare policy, the primary objective of Canadian healthcare policy, and I'm reading from the Government of Canada website at the moment, it is hereby declared that the primary objective of Canadian healthcare policy is to protect, promote, and restore the physical and mental well-being of residents of Canada and to facilitate reasonable access to health services without financial or other barriers. Period.
Wow. Flies in the face of that, pretty much, eh?
And can you imagine what is going to happen in the courts in Canada come April Fool's Day? Now, are the courts and the justice system ready for this? Because every one of us that are caught illegally, quote-unquote, with our medicine, and I have to say, in my estimation, in my view, this is my opinion, April Fool's Day, 2014, the gray area that has existed in Canada under the watchful eye and, I don't know, ignorance of Health Canada and their controllers, is going to disappear entirely. If your name or the garden is not listed on the Health Canada website, it is illegal. And if the cannabis you possess does not come in that white plastic bottle with their picture and name and stuff on it, it is illegal.
Okay.
It'll be black and white. Clear.
So this is all rolling out in April of 2014.
April Fool's Day. We're supposed to destroy our medicine on March 31st.
Wonderful. Okay, well, this criminalization thing, I've got a clip about that too. And here it is.
Could we be the creators of what we now see as some of our biggest problems? Have our solutions been prelude to our worst fears?
You know, the use of the criminal law for the basis of public health is a wholly bad idea, no matter how you cut it.
It doesn't work. You cannot legislate morality.
One person can say it's immoral to legalize it just as much as someone can say it's immoral not to legalize it. It doesn't get you anywhere. You have to have a rational policy debate by talking about the consequences.
Now, I've had young people tell me that, well, your generation had a martini and that was your crutch, and why can't we have our own kind of crutch? You know what? Why don't you be a generation that doesn't have to have any kind of crutch?
It's a lot easier argument. If you just say, oh, it's immoral, then you don't have to debate why it is that alcohol kills so many more people than marijuana, or why it is that tobacco takes 7 years off your life and we can't establish that marijuana does anything particularly.
If people do drugs and they commit crimes around those drugs, they should in fact be punished. But you can't punish someone for something that hurts no one.
We should legalize marijuana, tax the hell out of it, and put every dime back into the healthcare system.
Oh, yay, so...
Tax the hell out of it. That's what we're doing. We pay HST on that at $9 to $12 a gram, plus shipping every 150 grams, too, by the way, under the new regime.
Yeah, so, you know, to go to my Facebook wall, because I, you know, I kind of commented that I put out a call to the community last night and said, hey, doing this show and want you guys to comment on this stuff as it, you know, broke in the news, etc. You know, and I've got, you know, Priscilla on here that is just absolutely in distress about what this is going to do to her life. And she says we truly need a miracle. And
yeah,
I mean,
we do.
I mean, that's... I do miracles every day, just for the record, but these things are not impossible. But, you know, she's truly in a panic, and, you know.
I have to say many of us are. Yeah, and David, do you know Haley Rose?
No.
Okay, I'll give you an example. Haley Rose is a little girl, well, she's not a little girl anymore. When she was 15 years old, she got her first authorization to use cannabis as medicine. She has LGS, which is a severe and rare epileptic seizure disorder. And the minute I met Haley Rose, she went into a grand mal seizure. In Ottawa, in January 2011, the first time that the MMAR patients lobby group went to Parliament and did a press conference to beg the government to listen to us. Okay? We actually had Liberal MP Carolyn Bennett, Dr. Carolyn Bennett was there, and a number of others, Alison Merton, Adam Greenblatt from,
Montreal.
In Montreal. Haley Rose, she is alive because of low THC, high CBD cannabis strains. The only company that has a license now is offering 9, 12, and 19% THC, and any one of those would likely kill her. So, take it from here.
So what is she going to do?
Good question. Her mom grows her medicine now.
I just like
what is she going to do?
I hope Richie Ritt, but I just want to read another patient's testimonial. This is from Richie Rich. Just love the fact the government is taking my right to grow cannabis, yet they are not covering it, so I can't afford it. Now I won't be able to walk, hold my kids, and even let them sit with me most of the time. Yes, thanks a lot, conservative government, and to those who said, oh, they won't take your right away. Now what do you say? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
So it's every one of us. This is really, really hurting a lot of Canadians. How many Canadians are on the medical marijuana system?
Over 26,000.
And even the ones that aren't. I mean, it's a total farce. I mean, I'm lucky. Lori's lucky enough to find a doctor. Doctors won't. I'm sure Lori has heard so many devastating stories of people who are suffering because they cannot find a doctor.
I guarantee you, for every one of us that has an exemption, there are thousands that need one.
Well, I know myself personally. I suffer from Meniere's disease, and And
yeah, oh, see, that, you know, it's one amazing.
One of the cures, I mean, it doesn't work for me because I'm actually one of the people that have an anaphylactic allergy to marijuana. So,
oh, wow.
So I'm, you know, that's marijuana rare. With my asthma, it's not available to me in any way.
Oh, you should look into ingestion. Oh, so, seriously? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm not willing to gamble my life to play and try and find something that works. I mean, that's
well,
just...
Well, okay, can I give you just a really quick... I'll try to make this short. When I was first afflicted... Okay, I've been afflicted for over 20 years with some of the conditions I have. It got really, really, really bad when I was 45 years old. I was stricken with pain, and the doctor... At that time, I was working. The doctor tried to address the pain. The first time he gave me OxyContin, I had to quit my job because I couldn't write an email. Over 2.5 years, at one point, every day I was taking 320 milligrams of OxyContin, 12 Oxycoset, 2,700 milligrams of Neurontin, 75 milligrams of Effexor, 20 milligrams of Amitriptyline every day.
Ow. Wow.
Under contract to purchase it from the dispensary in the clinic that he owns. And if he perceived me to break that contract, he could throw me out. And one day he did. Thankfully, it was after he signed my first authorization for cannabis application, which, by the way, didn't go through for 3 years till I found another doctor. But I was able to get him to sign the thing for the Compassion Club in Montreal. And I owe my life to that, because when he threw me out that day... 36 hours later, my son dragged me to the emergency room and said, you have to help her, you have to do something. Because in Ontario, I don't know if anybody's aware, you can't find a doctor, you can't get drugs at a walk-in clinic, and they're not supposed to give them to you at the ER. So the doctor broke down and said he'd give me 5 days' worth, and I said, okay, I want them in 20s. And I only want this and this. And he said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm detoxing, thank you very much. And he said, you can't do that, you'll kill yourself. And I said, well, I'm sorry, is there a detox center I can use cannabis? He said, no. And I said, thank you, 20. And I took that, and I went to Montreal, and I got $600 worth of cannabis, and I came home, and I detoxed in 2 weeks, and I haven't done a pill since 2007.
2 years for me.
Wonderful. Well, you guys, we're going to take a short break here, and we will be back after these messages with Lori and David talking about medical marijuana and marijuana use in Canada. So hold on, guys. We'll be right back.
We are all in this together, brothers and sisters. We can do better.
And welcome back to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. I'm Michelle Boyce, and I am on air with David Dubois and Lori McEachern, and we are talking about the Conservatives government's plans to dismantle the current medical marijuana system and put on his own ideas, which is basically the Conservative government entering the high crime drug racket for profit, in my opinion. So, you guys, we heard a little bit about Lori's story. How about you, David? Can you tell everyone your story?
My story. I'm diagnosed with HIV in 89, and probably developed, don't have the, anyway. At any rate, and went through a really dark period in the 90s, just about died at least 3 times. I have an amazing doctor who is totally supportive, in every which way. I'm really lucky that way. At one point I was up to 36 pills a day. I was down to 120 pounds, and now for 2 years, as a result of cannabis use, I am completely pharmaceutical free, and was on antipsychotics since I was 13 as a result of drugs as a result of a sexual abuse when I was a child, and now living a pretty peaceful, calm life in Sudbury. Ontario.
Wow. That is a story in a heartbeat there. And that's what I find when I'm talking to people that are, you know, using medical marijuana for health reasons is, you know, Lori's list of narcotics, all one can really say about that is welcome to Zombieville, eh, Lori? Lori, are you there? We seem to have lost Lori.
Oh, are you there?
Are you there, Lori? Hello?
Oh, sorry about that.
No problem.
I have a neuropathy, and I was trying to unmute you. I've been sitting here trimming my cannabis, so I muted you so you couldn't hear the click, 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 click of my clippers.
Wow, you're early.
Oh, guy, it's
done. Lori, I love you.
Sorry about that. What was the question?
The question I put to you was that you were talking about that phenomenally large list of narcotics that you were on.
Yes.
And I said that that's pretty much Zombieville, isn't it?
I have to say, for about 2.5 years, I lived in a Lazy Boy that was positioned quite close to the washroom, so I didn't have to go very far. I remember trying to wake up with family members' faces saying, are you okay? Do we need to call 911? Like, do you need help? And I kind of go, well, I didn't take too many pills, so I think this is okay. I shouldn't have been driving, but I was left with a driver's license, and they gave me a handicap parking permit because I wasn't apparently able to walk safely 100 feet through the parking lot. But it was a really good idea to make me park up near the store where all the people are walking.
Oh.
Like, the whole thing was just absurd. I for 2.5 years now, I have to say, I'm sorry I didn't let anybody take a picture or video of me, because it was different. And my family members, one time I was watching that intervention show, late at night, nothing else on TV, I kind of flipped through it. And the look of the person on the screen, I could tell from the way their jaw fell back, the color of their skin, they were on oxy. And I can pick it out in a parking lot now.
Yeah.
It's a horrible thing. And it was only every second Tuesday at 9 a.m. when I was waiting to go to the doctor and aim my car a couple of miles away to get more pills for $2 that it occurred to me that, geez, I need help. So I Googled Pain Clinic Canada and saw Dr. Mark Ware at McGill University, who is a member of the Canadian Consortium of Investigation of Cannabinoids, who is the doctor who did the only Canadian clinical study of the use of smoked cannabis in neuropathic pain, which had amazing results. I believe it was published in August 2011 in the Canadian Medical Journal. Peer-reviewed, by the way, for any doctors listening. He's the one that said, well, his website said, if you get a referral, you may get in 6 months. That morning, I told the doctor I needed a referral. And I was there in 2 weeks. And he said, have you heard that cannabis can help in neuropathic pain? And I said, no. And he says, well, it's illegal, but you can get an authorization. And by the way, there's a compassion club a few blocks away, but it's illegal. But your doctor can sign to apply, but it's illegal. So I went home and I went to the doctor and I got him to sign both applications, and I've been using it ever since.
Wonderful.
I have another example of a young fellow from Winnipeg. The young fellow has been on every antipsychotic going. At 21, he's experiencing liver failure from all these pharmaceuticals.
God.
There is no doctor that will, and he wants to be on cannabis in the worst way, and there is no doctor going to. And he hasn't found a doctor to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And that's not an isolated story.
Thousands of stories like that. And the doctors, if they know, this is the thing, okay? We had an event, the Patients Alliance had an event in Ottawa in June. And we invited Dr. Udo Schuklenk, who is the Ontario Chair of Bioethics, Queen's University professor in philosophy, and asked him to speak to this liability issue that the doctors are concerned about. Like, oh yeah, it God forbid that you be the doctor of the first person in recorded history that actually dies from cannabis use. But what are the ethics of that in opposed to knowing that your patient uses cannabis illegally, seeing the medical benefits, telling them to go ahead and keep using it? You're counseling them to break the law for the betterment of their health when you could sign a piece of paper and allow them to do it legally.
Well, that
they
brings
should be ashamed.
Up. Yeah, that brings up a whole nother argument. Mm. And, you know, here's the political argument.
What do they want? We should be making use of this plant. And really, that's all I can say. The restriction, the prohibition is all, in my mind, just stupidity. And I don't condone stupidity.
And that's a problem. How do politicians, after years of promoting claims of marijuana's harms, pushing for larger drug war budgets, constructing political platforms based on a stance that vilifies marijuana, and being lobbied by big business, how do these same politicians now reverse their stance?
What politician can come before their constituents today and say marijuana should be decriminalized when yesterday they said it was evil and dangerous? Their constituents are gone and want to know why you changed your mind. Were you lying to us or were you stupid? Either way, you're not getting elected next time.
Whoops, we made a mistake. You 17 million people should not have been arrested. Some of you jailed, some of you fined, some of you lost the handle on your career.
One way to bypass this problem in the face of ever-growing empirical evidence is to divert attention. Add a word. Medicinal. Put the word medicinal in front of marijuana, and you are now talking about something completely different if you're a politician. Why is there a perception that healthy people are affected differently and unable to fend off the detrimental consequences? Whereas a person with a lowered immune system or terminal illness seems to experience none of these effects?
Some people go home at the end of the day and they drink to kind of wash away the day, you know, just like, ah, oh, that was a hard day, I need a few drinks, relax, kick back. So is that relieving pain? Maybe. Or is it pursuing pleasure? I don't know. So if you think about this in the context of cannabis, it also has relevance. The government's a lot more likely to forgive cannabis use if it's for relief from pain. If it's in pursuit of pleasure, that's a problem. And I think that points to something about our culture that's a little bit odd.
What works for one doesn't necessarily work for another. The father-son confrontation.
Mom smokes like a chimney. And you have a drink every day and smoke too.
It's not the same.
Why not? You can get cancer. Your liver can rot away.
They believe today, and I'm disappointed in the media, that it hasn't brought this information, this new information, to the people of this country more than it has. They believe that marijuana could well turn out to be the most dangerous drug that is in use in our country today.
If you're a politician, you can get elected on a get-tough-on-crime platform. We're going to lock up all the marijuana cultivators for a long time because you're preying on the fears of the public.
Spokesmen for giant special interest groups, whether those special interest groups be law enforcement or whether they're private prisons or whether they're pharmaceutical companies or whether they're oil companies. We have spokesmen for gigantic corporations that are trying to calm us and get us to press the right button in the voting booth.
Everybody that gets in has their own agenda. They're beholden to their own lobbyists, so they don't go in and check the work of anybody before them. That's not their job, because God forbid somebody come in there and check what they do afterwards.
I understand why politicians may be reluctant to act on their principles, but our politicians need to read their own polls, because this is one of those cases, and it happens a lot in life, where the people are ahead of their leaders.
Now, guys, Larry?
Yeah. Yes.
We're having fun here, but...
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, how do I put this? We're having the conversation about medicinal cannabis today, but I will interject that
one hectare of medicinal cannabis can sequester 22 tons of CO2. If cannabis was legal, cannabis, by the way, is hemp, is cannabis, is hemp, is cannabis. It's all the same plant. Okay? So by putting cannabis on the CDSA, you're also controlling hemp. Hemp can, it can leach heavy metals from the soil. It can sequester CO2 while it's growing. It is a fiber. It is an oil. It is a petroleum. It can be made into, it has cellulose. It can be made into, like cellophane. It's all biodegradable. It's amazing plant. In, Europe, there's actually a company that made something called Biosativa, which is a biodegradable oil, dispersant. Okay? They could have been used in the Gulf, by the way. They even offered some to them. But, oh, God, it's cannabis. So, you know, you can't do that. And it's just... What they're doing to try to make money could have far better been served by just opening it up as a commodity.
Well, that's kind of why I brought this up as a point. I mean, really, it's... How do you govern yourself as a politician when you're sitting there? And I mean, Ronald Reagan's quote there was just brilliant, right?
I was laughing. Yeah.
It's the worst thing that's ever gonna be for society. Blah blah blah. But here, it's a medicine.
Exactly. I know, and that's the thing. Like when people say legalize cannabis in Canada, I'm sorry, it's been legal since 2001 as medicine, but regulated. So, when you say legalize now, you're really talking about legal industrial commercialization of the medicine. Only, by the way. So, too little, too late, half-assed job, I'm not quite sure, but I know that somebody's going to have to pick up the tab for this, because when I was on those pharmaceuticals, Trillium was paying $50,000 a year for the pharmaceuticals, and I was going to the doctor 30 times a year.
Yeah.
Now I go once, and I cost nobody anything.
Yeah, a couple of phone calls a year for me.
So saying use less or go on pills is really not an option either.
Well, no, it's not an option at all. And, I mean...
Well, that's what the health minister was said one time when... I'm not sure whether I saw it in an article or whether it was an actual out-of-her-mouth thing. But at one point, yeah. Because they may also be... Under the new regulation, there is a limit on how much is dispensed, shipped, returned, held, possessed of 5 ounces. Now, that is the equivalent of 5 grams a day, which is the standard-ish thing that Health Canada has been telling everybody they don't need more than 5 grams a day for the last 12 years, despite the fact that they say that there's no evidence that it's medicine. Apparently, they found evidence about an arbitrary limit, because... now, I have heard that Prairie Plant Systems is saying that that's their limit to provide to somebody in a month. That's less than half of what I use today. And as a sidebar, something that occurred to me the other day, the impact of the cost of this is that what it cost me to produce my medicine for a year, high-quality, actual flower medicine that's so sticky that you can't, it's just amazing. They want to replace it with a whole bunch of stuff that's pre-ground, radiated, and stuff like that. What it cost me for an entire year will supply me with their crap for 2 days.
And, I mean, that pretty much says it all. How does the possession laws, I mean... Just because you have a license doesn't mean that, A, you're going to have it on you, and, B, the cop on the street's going to believe you. And how does that play into this?
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, fortunately, me and Sudbury, I've heard a bunch of horror stories. I mean, we used to get a plastic ID card. Somehow they took that away, and we're supposed to be traveling with a legal-sized document to state that, which is totally bogus. I mean, who's going to travel with a legal-sized document to state? You know, Health Canada has been totally incompetent with administering the plan. Just and they make the hoops and regulations are just, like, sometimes I just shake my head. It took me 6 months to get an address change in, to get when I was waiting for them to be delivered. Now, what other, you know, I literally, I was supposed to be without my meds for 6 months if I was relying on Health Canada. Health Canada, I just can't say, is the most incompetent body I have ever encountered in my entire life.
Yeah, agreed. And they would create periods of illegality, I will say, okay?
So, which you're supposed to get rid of your meds because they took too
right.
long to renew, which is totally retarded. Sorry,
yeah.
bad German, but
no,
yeah.
Seriously, he's right, okay? So, yeah, they would give an 8 to 10 week processing time. So if you had yours in 12 weeks ahead of time and they still didn't do it in 12 weeks, with the day that your authorization ran out, you were supposed to destroy your medicine and wait for them to get it off their butts and get the authorization to you before you could then again start to produce or possess medicine. And if you were caught in between that section of illegality, I know people that Health Canada representatives proactively participated in the prosecution of the patients.
Yeah, and that's not isolated either. But fortunately, I have an excellent relationship with the police here, and that's not been an issue with me at all. They've been pretty
Some
supportive.
Of us are lucky, yes, exactly. But it's happening everywhere. I had one situation where I waited far longer than the allotted time frame, and then I got my authorization. It had run out 6 weeks earlier, and I was all excited. I got it. I opened it up, and the stamped date was 2 weeks in the future.
Oh, my God.
That happened to me twice.
Wow.
And they're deliberate. I mean, you can look incompetent, perhaps, you know, once in a while, but it is so rampant, it's got to be deliberate.
Yeah, well, you know, how does the Safe Streets Omnibus Bill come into play here with minimum sentencing for possession? So you're caught with medical marijuana and you're in an expired state. You're waiting for paperwork to be filed.
Yep.
And
you're just like everybody else at that point.
And then you end up in jail for 10 years for possession.
Pretty much. One of our members is in jail now.
So,
because he has
how as a community do you deal?
One of our members is currently in jail as a result of a breach that resulted from a charge that resulted from him having an authorization, and then the doctor lost his authorization, so then they revoked his authorization, but he already had his medicine, and then he got caught.
That's like telling me that the greenhouse or green barn with the red roof in the country.
basically, he was legal, okay, and then through whatever situation, his doctor's authorization to sign.
That you're talking about, Dr. K?
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, that's another situation. Any doctor who has stepped forward compassionately to help patients whose own doctors have refused to stick their necks out for us. Are persecuted, prosecuted, taking their rights away. It's just a farce. There are probably about 4,000 patients who have been missing their medical files for how long, David?
Over a year now?
Over a year now, the RCMP or OPP or somebody's been holding the medical files of over 4,000 patients of Dr. Rob Kammerman's. That we're supposed to be.
I haven't been following that story too closely.
Okay, I gotta get one more thing in here and get to your point.
Sure.
And it's a little bit off of, it's more on the legalization than the medical, but,
you know,
you can't have this conversation without Save the Children coming up. And so I got a little clip here and then I want quick comments from you both, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And without control, it's hard to regulate areas of concern. Like keeping it out of the hands of our children. There have been some studies that suggest heavy sustained long-term use from adolescence to adulthood has the potential to exacerbate symptoms of those with a genetic predisposition for schizophrenia. And although there is strong evidence that refutes this, it does lead one to question. Could there be a better way of deterring children from using, rather than letting dealers decide what age is appropriate?
For the last 10 years, our children across the United States have said that it's easier to buy illegal drugs than it is to buy beer and cigarettes.
It's harder to get beer because you have to go through a regulated establishment that's going to check ID, that's going to have those safeguards in place, that isn't just going to sell it to you because you got 40 bucks in your pocket.
The guy down on the street corner, he doesn't want to know how old they are. He don't want to see an ID. He says, show me the money. And if they get the money, it doesn't matter if that child is 4 years old. They're going to get the dope.
If you can't control the sale of the product, how on earth are you going to keep it out of the hands of kids?
You know, I bring this up because you can't, I mean, Trudeau is advocating in Ottawa for you know, decriminalization, legalization, whatever it is this week. And, you know, and everybody's always save the children. So, you know, I can't have a show without talking about saving the poor children.
Saving the poor children from cancer or saving the poor children from themselves?
Well, apparently saving them from marijuana use.
That would be saving them from themselves.
So, you know, how is there any way that the medical marijuana system can be exploited by children to gain access to marijuana?
Now?
I don't think so. Well,
legally exploited?
Go ahead.
I was going to say legally exploited. I don't know.
I
unless,
doubt it.
Yeah,
extremely
me too.
Hard.
I don't know.
It's hard enough for real patients, let alone a...
Bingo. Yes, exactly.
Where were the kids? I mean...
I know children who use cannabis, but it's because their parents are administering it to them instead of chemicals. Right?
Yeah, well, it's pretty... I run a youth group, and, I mean, they can access marijuana...
Sure, and booze and everything. I don't
booze
know
is
about
hard.
Nowadays.
You know, these kids can't get drunk. They can get high.
I don't know.
I started smoking when I was 12 years old.
Yeah, me too.
It's...
Yeah,
you know,
cigarettes are easy to get their hands on as well.
No, I'm talking about pot. I was smoking pot when I was 12 years old. Kids experiment. Don't overreact and... be a conduit of information and trust. That's the only way you're going to, you know, be a parent.
Yes, I agree.
No, yeah.
Because I legally used cannabis when my child knew that until he was 18 and he was out on his own and doing whatever he did. Like, it was expected for him not to drink until it was time, and you know what I mean? It's. I have to say, although I... started using cannabis when I was about 14 years old. Looking back on it now that I am saving my life with it, I see that in retrospect I was medicating something when I was using it.
For sure.
When I was in school, in high school, oh man, I did 2 entire years and came out with 4 credits. I couldn't have cared less. A year later, under the use of cannabis because I lived away from home, I went to a college upgrading program and did 9, 10, 11, and 12 with distinction in 6 months.
Wow.
So, apparently, nowadays I would have been put on Ritalin. I was called precocious when I was a child. But, if there had been an ADHD diagnosis when I was a kid, I'm sure I would have had it.
Oh, yeah. But one thing, Michelle, before we go, I really want to thank you for giving us this opportunity to stay.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful. Okay, so anything else you guys want to add quickly? We got less than a minute.
We really need help.
The
Medicinal Cannabis Patients Alliance of Canada is selling, or not selling, we are accepting donations for a legal fund to represent us going forward. If we have to actually fight this in court, we are prepared to do so. There's also a coalition against repeal being run by a lawyer called John Conroy out on the West Coast. Our organization, being an incorporated patient alliance, we're taking care of our own, shall we say, by trying to raise money for our organization. MCPAcanada.org is our website, and everything's there. We have sweatshirts and T-shirts to give away in exchange for donations, and we have a fundraiser site going too.
Wonderful. Well, you guys, you have been wonderful getting this information out there to our audience. David, Lori, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been a pleasure. And for everyone else out there, you can listen to all of our other shows and all of our other blogs and other things at www.betweenthemargins.ca, and we hope that you have a happily ever after, whatever that means to you.